Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, we're in the fall season. I know your wife loves this season from a photography perspective.
She does.
What about you? Is this your favorite season?
Oh, I don't know if it's my favorite. I love them all. The only one that maybe I'm a little bit not crazy about is winter. Not because it's winter, but because I can't get out on my bike. And you know me, I love to be out on my bike. So fall is a great time for that. Winter, not so much, but it is fun when you do get one of those rare days in winter where it warms up enough to get out of my bike. So that's cool. But I always look forward to the autumn, and here we are.
Al, I can see it now, you know, the dark studio with the neon, and you're in one of these spinning classes, you know, and the music's popping in the, you know, that maybe that could be your winter thing. Who knows?
Maybe in a future life.
Well, I'm super excited today because one of the things I found with this podcast is we get amazing introductions. So joining us today is AJ Tabando, a dynamic entrepreneur and innovator, as well as a strategist known for launching impactful startups. We're excited to dive into her insights on innovation and leadership. Thanks for joining us today, AJ.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And before we start, we got to give a special shout out to one of our good friends who's also been on the podcast and is actually speaking at Tech Talent North very soon. So I'm very excited to see her speak, is Kara Wilson Oliver. So thank you, Kara. We're really looking forward to this.
Yeah, Kara's the best.
She really is. So AJ, let's jump into it. So I was stalking your LinkedIn and just looking at it. I always pick out a few things that I see. And, you know, as self-described innovator and strategist, what are some of the key challenges and opportunities you foresee in shaping the future of entrepreneurship and innovation?
What a great kickoff question. I think that the world is changing so fast. And I think that for entrepreneurs these days, it's not enough to just sort of think about what's the product that I want to build or what is the value add to the individual customer that I want to have, but what is it about the world that I want to change? What do I want to leave differently than I found it when I came here? And I think that we're at a point where people are really hungry for a new kind of leadership. When it comes to everyone, when it comes to our thought leaders, our entrepreneurs, our managers, there's a human element here where people want to be seen and valued and feel like they have someone on their side. The world has been very challenging in the last couple of years. And I think people are starting to really feel left behind. And so the more that as a leader in any role, you can help people feel seen, you can help them feel heard, and you can help them feel like you're making their life a little bit easier, I think that that's a really powerful place to start. And there are a lot of big challenges out there right now. So there's no shortage of ways that you can go about doing that.
When you talk about being seen and heard, and I remember, I'm going to say back in the day, and of course, age myself here, but I remember one of the things that made me successful earlier on in my career, I was working for an insurance company, and I had to drive downtown Toronto when I was living out in Mississauga and get in front of people, and I got to have conversations, and I got to know people, and I got to create relationships. And now that we're running a company, I don't work for the insurance company anymore. I work with insurance companies. And I hear that quite often. Let's make sure employees feel heard and seen in the company. And when I go back to think about the old days again, I think about, well, that's pretty easy to do if you're in the office. And we've gone to a hybrid approach. We're in the office 3 days a week. And I like that I can see most of my team, they come down for coffee, which is right in front of my office. I get to chat with them. I can pop upstairs. And we have these great connections. The challenging part is We also have employees in Vancouver, in Montreal, working remotely. How do you still accomplish those goals when you have this distributed workforce? Because I know a lot of companies are challenged with that today.
Yeah, again, I think that's a very timely question. Having an employee feel seen, not just that their employer knows who they are, their manager knows who they are, but really sees their value. That doesn't happen by accident. Whether you're physically in front of someone, you know, I've certainly had moments where I have been standing in front of a leader in my organization and felt totally invisible to them, right? Mm. At the same time, I've had deep relationships that I've built with people whom I've never met in person. And I think that at the end of the day, there's a ton of value in in-person connection. There is definitely something important that happens when people are face-to-face. But I don't think that we can assume that really connecting on an emotional level or an intellectual level is just going to naturally happen because we're in the same room. Oftentimes when you're in the same room with someone or a group of people, the loudest people are the ones who speak the most and are seen the most, right? The quieter people or the people who might not feel comfortable speaking up end up sort of fading into the background. Whereas if you are in a remote environment, you can structure how people talk, how people are given space a little bit differently. So I don't know that one is inherently better than the other. I think there's value in both and you can pull value from both. But at the end of the day, what makes people seen is an intentional approach to how you build a relationship with them as a manager. When I was building Pallet, my previous organization, we started in person. We were started in an incubator. And then we were, I think, maybe four people when the pandemic hit. We grew to almost 70 people over the next couple of years. And all of that happened remotely. And so we had to think very intentionally about how do you build a culture from scratch in an environment that is 100% remote? How do you build a sense of connection and relationship with people in an environment that is 100% remote when you don't have anything to really rely on because the organization didn't exist prior to that, right? And the way that you do it is by really being empathetic and putting yourself in other people's shoes and saying, what do I need to feel like I'm connected to this organization? What do I need to hear? What are the touch points and the questions? And what does listening look like to really feel like I'm connected to the people around me and the leaders leading me? And so, again, I think it's possible to build that. I think it's imperative to build it because, as you said, even in environments where you're in a hybrid, there's a good chance you have people, you know, this was pre-pandemic as well. You have people in other provinces, other countries. And so I think it's imperative for all leaders to understand how to build relationships and connections remotely, regardless of whether all of their work happens online or if it's partly in person as well.
I think you make a lot of sense because, and Al, I know you want to jump in there. One of the most surprising things that happened through the pandemic when we went remote, because we did used to record the podcast in person, and then it came to a time where we couldn't.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, we're not going to make the same connections with people. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have been more wrong. Mm-hmm. Some of the relationships and friendships, and I talked about Cara. We gave Cara a shout out at the beginning of the podcast. We've created such a great friendship with her that when we met with her recently just to get together, you know, to break bread together in person, we didn't skip a beat. It was like going from the digital space to the physical world, you know, big hugs. And we just, there was no awkwardness. And I just thought, so that was a big surprise for me. So I think you're right. Maybe you take some different tactics, but it's very, very possible to build those deep connections even through the digital space. So that really resonates with me.
Yeah.
I just wanted to maybe dig a little deeper. And you touched a little bit on it right at the very end. You were talking about people wanting to be seen, wanting to be heard. And, you know, it's really important for managers, leaders, whatever, to be cognizant of that. But let's flip it around. What about those people, the team members? What are some things that maybe they can do if they're feeling that way to maybe, as you said, you know, the quiet ones in the room? Are there some things that they can do to say, hey, I'm right here? You know what I mean? Like, so that they take some proactive measures to make sure that they are seen and heard.
Yeah, I think the way that you're seen is by speaking up. So I had this moment myself. I think this is a challenge that no matter what stage you're in your career, you have these moments where you don't feel seen. And so yeah, I have this story of, this was a couple of years ago, I was going through, I would say, a rough spot in my career. Pallet hadn't quite started to scale yet. There was some challenging relationships I was dealing with. I was kind of starting to isolate myself and starting to shrink myself almost a little bit. And I was working with this really incredible coach. I'm going to give her a shout out. Her name's Lauren Malak, and she is a wonderful person and coach for me. And I was talking to her about this feeling that I felt like I've got so much to give. I've got so much potential. I've got, you know, I think I'm a good person, a good partner here, but I just don't feel seen. And she asked me, well, what are you doing to show yourself? And it was one of those moments, you know, I was like, well, hiding under my covers in my bedroom and waiting for someone to discover me. I mean, that's, you telling me that's not a winning, you know, a winning strategy here? No. And I reflected on it and I wasn't doing much. I really, you know, was kind of just heads down, doing a lot. And it was the midst of the pandemic. There was a lot of stuff going on that led me down that direction. But at the end of the day, I wasn't showing myself to anyone, to the people that I wanted to be seen by. And so I think that for anyone, a leader, an employee, a manager, the first thing you need to do if you want to be seen is show yourself to others. And so what does that look like? That means reaching out to your manager. And if you don't feel like you're getting enough FaceTime, ask for it. Say, you know, can we grab 20 minutes to chat one-on-one? I'd just like to talk to you about a couple of the things I'm working on and get some perspective on it. I had young colleagues do that to me all the time when I was at Pallet. Slack me, just say, hey, do you have some time? I'd just love to chat. People that didn't even work directly for me who just wanted to connect with me. And I always made the time for it because that was important to them and it was important for me. I mean, it was great for me to get to know them better and to hear what they were up to. But it was them taking the initiative to just get on my radar, talk about what they're up to. And I think that speaking up in those meetings, if you feel like you've got ideas and you're not sharing them, well, no one's going to see you. So share them, get it out there. And I think in a virtual environment, there's actually in some ways more opportunity to do that depending on the conversation. If you're on a Zoom, it could be putting your hand up. Sometimes it's uncomfortable to just jump in and blurt something out, but you could raise your hand. And so someone calls on you and you know you get to speak, or you could drop in something in the chat that says, oh, what about this? You could follow up afterwards on Slack or whatever chat tools you have. There's a lot of ways to find a comfortable way to put yourself out there, but you have to put yourself out there if you want people to see you.
That's a great answer. And share a little story. So we have a new employee, not that new anymore, but especially at the beginning, 4 o'clock every day, a little knock on the door. That was her opportunity. Yeah. That was her chance, because I guess most of the day had kind of gone by and some people by that time have left the office, whatever. So 4 o'clock was the knock on the door. And that's when she asked her questions. But like you said, it gave me the opportunity to even just chat with her beyond the questions that she had. So now that she's a little bit more trained, if you will, or knows a little bit more, I don't get that knock quite as often, which I actually had said to her the other day, you know, I kind of miss our 4 o'clocks because you don't come in as often anymore. So I think that's some great feedback. And I hope that that'll resonate with some people. Yeah, I'm not going to get discovered under my covers, as you said.
Yeah. I mean, I was very comfortable, right? Like I didn't want to get out from under my covers. It was cozy in there, but you got to get a little uncomfortable sometimes. And once you do, you know, the reception I found was always really positive. I would add to that, though, for people who spent most of their career in more of an in-person environment as a manager or leader and are now trying to figure out how to adapt to a remote environment, I remember I've spent a good chunk of my career in the in-person world, right? And the sort of the 4 o'clock or the late afternoon sort of stand in the doorway and just chat move was definitely one that I've used in the past as well. Yeah. That looks a little different online. Right. And I think that it's important for people who are more used to how they're approached in an in-person environment with those sort of doorway chats to be open to the idea that there are other ways that my team might be trying to get on my radar or show themselves to me that are new. And you need to be open to that. So it might be that someone is like, why is this person slacking me all the time, pinging me all the time or chatting on Teams when, you know, but maybe that's how they're trying to get on your radar. Or why is this person asking for a one-on-one? I'm so busy all the time. But maybe they don't have a doorway to stand in. So what does that doorway look like virtually for someone who's trying to create it and is trying to figure out their own path in the world that's changing dramatically? And so I think it's, again, it's really about being open-minded and just open in general to your staff and to your team and creating the space for them to show themselves to you.
So AJ, I'd like to dig into that a little bit further, but I have a story to tell you that has carried with me throughout my career. And I'm just kind of realizing this now as you're talking about this issue. When I first started in the insurance industry and employee benefits, I would have to go down to that office that I mentioned down in Toronto.
Right.
And I was so young when I was coming in the industry, and most of the advisors that I was working with were seasoned, and this office did very, very well in Toronto. So a lot of experienced people. And I was nervous about coming in and being the guy who maybe didn't know much. I was the new person. And my strategy at the time was to always look busy. Like, I had so many things on my plate. So I remember I'd be in my suit, I'd have my briefcase, and I would speed walk around that office, and someone would eventually catch me and we'd have a conversation. But I would always make it appear that I'm busy. I'm working on a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And as you were chatting about this, I'm realizing, because I've had some of my team members like, oh my gosh, you're always so busy. Don't bug Robin with this. I've heard that a couple mm-hmm. of times. So I'm wondering if you could share with me personally some strategies so that people know, yes, I'm busy, but I do have time for you. I want to help you. I want you to do well in your career, and I want our company to do well. So what are some of the strategies that people like myself who find themselves in yeah. that situation can do to make sure, hey, it's okay, as Al said, to knock on the door?
Yeah, I think there's no substitute for just literally making yourself available, right? That can look in a lot of different ways, and it really depends on the environment that you're in. I think what you're saying is a very real message that staff pick up on very quickly, that, you know, the boss is busy, don't bug them, right? And so the first thing I think is just consistently reiterating vocally and intentionally that, yeah, you've got a lot on your plate, but you're never too busy to make time for someone to reach out. And I think that it's something you can say in every meeting that you have with your team. That's like, you just make that a mantra so that the next time they're like, maybe I'll reach out. Ah, he's really busy. But he says, you know, I should reach out anytime, right? Like yeah. get that narrative starting to shift inside their heads. The next thing you need to do is act on that, right? So if someone reaches out to you, respond quickly, right? So that you're demonstrating through your action that that person's a priority. Make time in your schedule for them, you know, as quickly sort of as you can, as is available. And really show through your actions that making time for staff is a priority. One thing that I really saw was that staff talk to each other, right? Especially the younger staff. They're trying to figure out what they're doing and how they work and building relationships with each other. And I found that after I, you know, had a couple one-on-ones or random coffees with people who had reached out, that started to spread, that just reach out to AJ. Yeah, she's totally available. Like, I reached out and we had a coffee the next day or whatever. That culture starts to spread amongst itself, and then you just keep reinforcing it. And some might say like, well, cool, but then, you know, I'm gonna be having coffees with my staff every day or every other. Yeah, you are. Like, you're a leader of an organization. An organization is made up of people, and you need to take care of them, and you need to help them feel seen. You don't have to do it forever, but, like, you know, you don't have to have a weekly coffee with every person on your team, but you have to make the space for that in your schedule as well, and be prepared to slow down on some of the other things you might be doing or make space for that. And for me, it was like a break. It was relaxing. It was fun. Like, I loved hearing about what people were up to. I loved helping them work through something that was on their mind. It was fun for me. So I think that if you can see it as fun, it doesn't feel like it's one more thing on your plate when an already busy day. You're watering your garden, right? And if you don't take care of it, you're only going to get more busy, because they're not going to be able to pull their weight or stick around or do whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think it's just really pounding that narrative that you care about them and that you're never too busy for them, and then reinforcing that with action.
Really solid advice.
So I want to move on and ask another question, but just before we do, so just going back to my story about person who always knocked at four. So yesterday I had a meeting coming up, and she came to me just about 4 o'clock and said, do you have 5 minutes? And I always say yes. But this time I said, actually, I don't. And the surprise on her face was like, what? You've never said that before. But it was just funny to see the reaction, because I actually had to say, actually, today I don't have 5 minutes. But
but you know what? And she knew she wasn't being blown off, right? Because you always make the time. And so when you don't have the time, like, people understand that, right? But
yeah, exactly. I want to go a little bit of a different path and just talk about your career journey a little bit. Looking back, what common themes or values have guided you through your different ventures? Are there some common themes or values that have gotten you to where you are?
Yeah, definitely. So my career path has been interesting and windy and ziggy and zaggy. I started growing up, I was always very interested in politics and power and systems and things like that. And I actually started my career as a political staffer at Queen's Park here in Ontario. And I spent about 6 years there working on different economic development policies, education policy, and really got to see how business, the economy, and people's quality of lives kind of all interact with each other from this very high systems level perspective. And then when I felt like I had done my tour of duty in that world, I got really interested in startups and the idea of using the tools of entrepreneurship to take some of those values of impact and change and helping people and build something on my own to do that. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 10 plus years is, you know, working in the world of startups. My first startup was focused on helping other younger people or university students who are interested in changing the world learn the tools of entrepreneurship to build startups. It was all very meta in its design. And then I founded Palette almost 8 years ago now. And that was focused on helping people whose jobs were disrupted by the economy, whether it was through AI or automation or other changing market forces, helping them transition into high demand roles with the skills that they had through upskilling programs. And we built that from an idea to scaling it. We raised $250 million from the federal government to scale it across the country and really drive impact kind of coast to coast. And so when I look back on all of these different things that I've done, definitely some of the common threads are helping people first and foremost. I've come to see how I'm a mission-oriented person fundamentally. And so really looking at how are the systems that govern our lives, that impact our future, whether it's economic, social, environmental, you know, how are these bigger systems functioning in such a way that it's creating our daily lives and our daily experiences, both good and bad? And how can we use products, tools, and policy to make changes to those systems to improve people's lives? And so, yeah, those have been really the common threads, is really one of impact and really human-centered impact, human-centered design, really looking at it through that as the sort of center unit of design in everything I do.
So I would love to hear, if one comes to mind, a success story.
When I think of the biggest success that I had in the last couple of years, it was, so I came out of government. I was really interested in startup life and just this whole concept. I jumped into that world back in 2013. So it was really kind of the dawn of tech in this version of it and rapidly building startups. And one of the things that I heard again and again as a social entrepreneur in a more traditional for-profit driven startup environment was like, that's not how things work. You're never going to grow and scale a nonprofit or an impact-oriented organization like that. You know, you can go build sort of community-based stuff or international development stuff, but like tech is the way that you really scale something rapidly. And I wanted to prove that narrative wrong because I thought that it was really important for the world to be able to take good ideas that were impact-oriented, that were sort of nonprofit in their mission and mandate, and prove that you could drive a high growth, exponential growth, high scale trajectory through the development of them. And so with Palette, part of what I wanted to do with that was really build something that would solve people's challenges in their jobs and help them find job security and financial stability. But I also wanted to prove that you could take a nonprofit startup model and follow an exponential growth curve in how you scaled it. And it took about 7 years to do that. But yeah, we took that thing from nothing to, you know, a couple million dollars, and then we're able to secure $250 million from the government to be able to expand it coast to coast. And so our hockey stick almost inverted and curved a little bit. It grew so fast. And that was a lot of fun. That was a real joy to be able to see. And I think what was the most exciting part of that was taking this vision and having the resources to really build the team, build the people, build the relationships around it to realize that vision. So yeah, anything is possible. It takes a lot of work and it's not always going to end the way you think it will, but it's always worth giving it a try.
Well, that's clearly a success story. And I thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
AJ, you've had a diverse career at this point. You're still going. I know you're doing great things now. But you've got the benefit of hindsight now.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have, because I hear from them on DMs after every episode, we've got a lot of young, aspiring entrepreneurs. And when I'm chatting with someone like you who have had the ups, have had the downs, have had those challenges, you've seen the success that we just talked about, what's like a critical piece of advice that you would leave for someone who's thinking, hey, I'm over here right now into my job. I'm about to take the leap because I really am passionate and I believe about something.
Mm-hmm.
But with the benefit of that hindsight, what's the advice that you would give out to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things really. The first is just try. All you can control is whether or not you try. You can't always control if you're going to be successful, but you can't be afraid to try or you'll never find out, right? I had a mentor once say to me, you generate more wins on a 50% success rate on 10 tries than you do on an 80% success rate on 5 tries, right? And so you can't be afraid of failing because you will. It's just, it's happened. You have to trust yourself that you can navigate whatever happens next after you try something, but you have to give it a shot, whatever that means. And you have to just find that starting point and get going. This is a little more tactical advice for an entrepreneur, but particularly for folks who are more sort of mission-driven or systems-driven like I was when it comes to starting something. No matter what you're starting, whether it is a sort of more standard for-profit product-based business or more of a nonprofit social impact business, in both cases, the fundamental job of the startup, no matter what kind of startup it is to achieve product market fit. And you can't lose sight of that because at the end of the day, whether you're trying to sell to a customer or just get a customer to change their behavior, a system doesn't adopt a product, a customer adopts a product. And if you can't get that customer to adopt your product, you're not going to achieve your bigger goals, whether that is high growth and high sales or whether that is high impact. So I think that particularly in the nonprofit and impact worlds, people stay more high level. They look at the sort of the big picture, the mission, and build for the systems change that they want to see. And I would really encourage them to pull that down a little deeper. Look at the core of who are the people within that system whose behavior you're trying to change, and how can you design a product or service or intervention that will help to change that behavior.
I think that's really good advice, and I think that'll help a lot of people. As we're chatting through this episode, and I'm just going back to an incredible story, and I love that you did it because people didn't believe that you could scale this company, you know, a nonprofit, to this mega growth, I forget what you called it, that had this large amount of growth.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been there and you've done it. And one of the things I was thinking about is when me, Al, and Joe, our other business partner, sat down recently, I'll take a step back. When we first launched the company, we did a mission and vision because you had to, and we stuck it on the wall. And for at least a decade, no one looked at it. We certainly didn't live it.
Right.
So we spent a lot of time in the last couple of years and redid them. And now we call them our guiding principles. And I find with other entrepreneurs and people who are building successful businesses, and I'm just, as I'm listening to you, I believe this. And if it's not true, you can tell me. But Al and I have certain, we have six of them in our company that we live and die by. And we talk about them all the time. We look for examples. We try to instill it in our employees. And quite frankly, if they don't resonate with you, you're probably not going to be with us very long, either of your own choice or ours, because it's just not going to be a fit. So I would love to ask you, as you were scaling that company and as you continue to do what you're doing, what's a non-negotiable principle that you've held onto while scaling the business or businesses?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, it comes back to understanding humans first, right? And I think that's sort of been a theme now that I've mentioned a couple of times. But the principle of, I'd say empathy, I guess, that permeates both the design approach that was taken of really putting yourself in the shoes of, in our case, our customer were employers who are hiring. And so really understanding not just the mechanics of what does it say on a job description and how do we match that job description, but what are they afraid of? What's holding them back? What are they excited by? How can we understand that the inner experience of hiring someone they might not otherwise hire and really build something that brings comfort or speaks to some of that inner experience? It's the same with a participant who would be switching jobs, right? And, you know, what are the fears that they're holding? What are the excitement? What are the questions that they're asking? Really understanding that deeply to build something that helps to tap into not just, again, the surface level need, but the inner need. And then I think that permeates all the way through the culture of the organization as well. The way that, you know, certainly I brought my approach to working with people and treating people and being an empathetic leader and understanding what was the experience of the team day to day. What were they going through? What were the, you know, if I was trying to understand how decisions were being made and I was in their shoes, would this bring me comfort? What else would I be asking? If I've been isolated in my home for the last 2 years because of COVID, what kind of connection points might I want to feel seen and heard, right? I think empathetic leadership and empathetic design was really a core component and principle of everything that I did, for sure.
You gave me goosebumps when you started talking about putting yourself in their shoes. And it's a recent conversation I had with Al. And to me, the fact that we're discussing those things tells us, okay, good. We're on the right track with what we're doing. Because hearing that from someone like you, that that's what you're doing as well, tells me, okay. And again, success leaves clues, my friends. This is why we do this. We want to tease out all these great things. We're at the point of the episode, my favorite part. Everybody knows this. Al has a signature question that we would love to throw your way and see how you answer it. I think you've already answered it in a lot of ways, but I think, who knows, you might have something else.
Yeah. So a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. Mm-hmm. So as someone who's had a lasting impact through your startups, are there any proverbial trees you're planting that will shape the future of entrepreneurship or innovation? Or maybe it's something outside of work. Maybe it's something in your personal life.
Yeah. One of the things that I think about a lot right now in my work and as I think about my future is how to inspire and support the next generation of leaders to take on whatever challenges they see in the world. It's not enough to have just a handful of people fighting the good fight. It's, you know, everybody needs to feel that they can show up and that they can have an impact. I think also a lot about, I'm a elder millennial. I'm hitting midlife. A lot of us are hitting that stage and crossing to the other side of 40 and starting to really kind of come into power in ways that we hadn't before and shifting. And I think a lot about how can we harness that opportunity to really use that power to leave the world better than we found it and make a difference. And so I think about those things a lot in how I can play a role in inspiring others to make a difference and follow their lead in that. And hopefully if we can do that, then we'll at least be able to make a little bit of a dent in the universe. So
wonderful. Well, thanks for sharing that. And, you know, it sounds like with what you have done and what we talked about today, you're already well on the path. So good luck continuing down that path and planting some of those proverbial trees.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is great.
AJ, thank you for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your story. For listeners who want to follow along with your journey or learn more about your work, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. Luckily, I think I'm the only AJ Tabando out there, so it's not hard to find me. And I also have a website, ajtabando.com. So either way, you can track me down.
Awesome. Well, that wraps up today's episode. We hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. If you'd like to connect with us or continue the discussion, feel free to reach out on LinkedIn or give us a call. Until next time, remember, success leaves clues. We saw it right here. Until next time, friends. Talk soon.